Good time of day, internet. It is me, your Green Ranger for the Zeo season, Mr. Ben Taylor. And if I sound a little bit exasperated, it's because it's like the 43rd time we've recorded this episode. Or more accurately, the second time we recorded this episode, because Mike decided not to back up his files. Good job, Mike. speaking of which, hello, Michael, our Blue Ranger this season.
I am Rocky, so I think I met the quota for the season.
Yeah, well, at least you get to make a video game later. Today is we are going to be talking about three episodes. We're going to be talking about Instrument of Destruction. We're going to be talking about Mean Screen. And we are going to be talking about Mr. Billy's Wild Ride, which is not quite as pornographic as it sounds. Anyway, starting with Instrument of Destruction, one of my favorite episodes of Zeo, quite frankly put, because it goes a lot more into the characters of the people we see on screen. Yes,
I would dare to say that it's probably one of the best episodes within maybe the first 4 years or four seasons of Power Rangers. Maybe not the best of them, but definitely, like, if there's like a top five or a top 10, it would definitely be up there.
It's definitely the best solo episode. Right?
Yeah.
Because it's not part of another arc. It's not even a part of like, it's not a part of like a part one, two, or three. It's not even a part of like a Kim's departure arc, like the greater introduction of Cat arc or the introduction of Adam, Tanya, and Rocky. It's just this one standalone episode that, again, in the first four seasons, it's definitely probably the best single standalone episode.
Well, it's interesting that you bring that up, because while, yes, this is a standalone, one of the interesting things is, and as everyone knows, we record these episodes out of order. Mm-hmm. One of the things that's really been noticed about Zeo is that there actually are a lot of story arcs.
Yes.
Because interestingly, we are legitimately actually in the Billy's Gone story arc in the beginning of the season. Because in the last episode, Brian and I
wouldn't necessarily call that a story arc.
Well,
it's not really a story arc. He's there and then he's not, and then he's there again.
Yeah,
right?
But then you look at what comes up, not next episode, but the episode after, where you begin with go to Sparrow and Arrowhead. That's a four episode story arc on Tommy. And then you have all these other.
Specifically said, by the way, when we started recording the season, I wanted nothing to do with. I'm recording one episode of that, and it's the last one.
And Brian and I did the first three. But the thing is, though, is that you see like story arcs with the villains.
Yeah. Yeah.
And stuff like that. So there's actually a lot of arcing and layering in this season. So like, say, you know, technically this really isn't a story arc for Billy, but it is a five episode arc from Graduation Blues to Billy's Wild Ride, where technically it's like Billy leaves, the Rangers work without Billy, and then Billy comes back. So it's like, in a way, even though it's technically not a story arc because they really don't make it a story, you kind of can look at it that way because of how everything is layered up.
I think in order for there to be a story arc, to be considered a story arc, there needs to be an overarching thing happening within the story. And there really isn't. It's just Billy goes to Aquitar. He's not there. Billy comes back from Aquitar. It's not really a story until
he comes back.
Till the episode he's coming back, right? Yeah.
But in a way, if you notice how they do some of the stuff, normally where Billy would play that role, you would have Alpha kind of comes back into the limelight a little bit. In the next episode that we talk about, Mean Screen, mm-hmm. you know, a new character is actually introduced to us. So it's like, in a way, they kind of, with these five episodes, or technically three episodes in between Billy leaving and Billy coming back, they kind of play around with the dynamic a little bit without openly saying, you know, oh, Billy's gone.
I mean, they do openly say Billy's gone, though. Well, like, yeah. In Mean Screen, they're openly like, oh, Billy's not here. I guess we'll have to rely on Raymond.
Yeah, so. But Instrument of Destruction.
Yeah, I'm glad to report we are still in the era of the full intro of Zio, not the foreshortened one, which isn't as good. There's a lot going on in this episode, right? The overarching story is that it is Queen Mashina's birthday, though I'm not quite sure how machines who are built have birthdays.
I mean, it was their built day.
Then it wouldn't be called a birthday, would it? It'd be called a assembly day or activation day.
Yeah, or maybe they consider activation day their birthday. I don't know. We were turned on. We were given life.
And King Mondo has forgotten, apparently, and decides that the best way to give something to Queen Mashina is music. And he decides to do so by apprehending a musician from Angel Grove High who is playing a piano. And he goes, I'm going to send the cogs down. And Prince Brock is like, well, I already did that, Dad. Yeah, about 10 minutes too late. At which point we see it's clearly a weekend or something, because Adam's the only person at the school other than this mystery pianist. And he spots the three cogs running across the courtyard. And while I'm very aware that I call Adam the best ranger of all time, is running after three cogs without notifying anyone the smartest thing he could have done?
Well, it's actually interesting, though. Like, as he's chasing them, he's not like just gun-hoing it towards them. He's actually being more stealthy. Because he's also kind of intrigued about why they're there. Because it's just not, like, because they're not attacking anyone. Like, he can tell that they're looking for something. So he's like, why don't I follow them and just kind of take a look at what they're trying to do?
Right, but we discover here that the music that we're hearing, this very over-the-top piano music, is diegetic. It's coming from the pianist, right? Because when he stops playing, it stops.
Yeah.
And it makes me wonder why Adam isn't reacting to hearing that music. Because it's really good. Yeah. Right?
Yeah, and it's interesting because we do see him react to it later on.
Yeah. Like, we see him walking with Kim, the Cat, and Tommy. I keep thinking of Kim because of what's coming in the next BFDG episode. Couldn't happen to a nicer guy. And they overhear the music and they go to look, right? So why he doesn't react to the music is weird.
Yeah, it definitely is interesting.
And we should have seen him reacting before the cogs showed up, right? Especially if he's in school trying to study. It's weird.
Well, I mean, I don't know. Like, sometimes it's like if the windows are open and you hear like the music class going on or something like that, or like he could be there on I wouldn't say it's a weekend. It'd probably be like a week, like after school thing, like a study, right, in a study hall or something. And obviously there's other after school activities going on. So he's probably hearing the music just going like, oh, that's just the music room. That's a natural thing.
Right. School. I get that. But 90% of the time you're sitting in a high school listening to music out the window, it's not going to sound like a concert pianist.
Yeah.
A very, very good concert pianist.
This is also very true.
So Adam bursts into the music room following the cogs, and there's this really nice moment where the cogs are stood there and Adam stood there, and there's just this metronome ticking, and it really ramps up the tension in the scene. It's really cool. I love it. And then Adam doesn't have to fight off the cogs. They just kind of disappear because the musician ran off. And we cut to what I think is the next morning at school.
Yeah.
And he's talking with Kat and Tommy. And Miss Rodriguez shows up, who is our new
authority figure
at the school for as long as it's going to last.
And we don't know, like, what actual role she plays in the school. Like, is she an assistant principal? Is she a counselor? Like, we don't know that because they never really clarify. Because, like, we know Mr. Kaplan's the principal.
Yes.
So it's very interesting that they never really clarified her.
But we discover something. Well, I discovered something here about the American education system, which is that you can take high school classes more than once.
Yes. I actually did that for classes that I really liked. So, like, I took a painting class 2 semesters in high school. And I also, even though you're only supposed to do it like 1 semester, I did on-job training, I think 4 straight semesters. For 2 full years, I did on-job training stuff, classes. So that is actually something that I have actually legitimately done.
That's interesting to me. Because at least when I was at school, which was many, many years ago in a galaxy far, far away at this point, in England, you had very set classes for the first 2 years that you were in the high school equivalent, right? And then when you were going into your second, into your third and fourth year, you got a set amount of electives. You got to pick a language, a science, an art, and a couple of other things. And you then studied those along with the core, like math, English, et cetera, et cetera, for the next 2 years. Like, you didn't go semester by semester. You just made a choice and you just studied it and you did it. So it's weird to me to be able to take classes more than once.
Yeah, because I know, like, when I was in high school, it would be every year you had to take a math, a science, an English.
Yeah.
And stuff like that. And then, like, history, like, you took it 4 years of history, and then you would have your electives. So, like, I know for, like, a year and a half, I did French. I did, like, a year of art, mm-hmm. which was mostly painting for me. I still actually have the paintings in my closet. Gym class was actually an elective.
Uh-huh.
Weight training was actually an elective. That was its own separate class. Mm-hmm. Was weight training. So it's like you had a whole bunch of those things, like on-job training, like I said. And the on-job training was always different for me. It actually bounced me around. So I did different things. So I was like a teacher aide 1 semester, and then I was like in the front office helping with that for a semester. Mm-hmm. So it was always different.
And apparently, that then leads to another thing I learned about the American education system, which is that teachers can alter your classes.
Teachers can't. Counselors can't.
School representatives can alter your classes.
Yeah, like I've never had, I know for a fact teachers can never change the schedule outright. Like they can say, like, you're not working with me as your teacher, and then put in the recommendation into a different class of the same subject.
Mrs. Rodriguez literally walks up and goes, you don't get to take English anymore, you're doing music.
Yeah.
Which, if that had happened in England, she would have been sued. Quite, just being blatant about it. Yeah, it would have, I'd have been like, no. And there would have been nothing she could have done about it.
Yeah, and but I do know that for the most part, like, I never had a counselor or anyone come to me and say, I'm changing your class because you've done this too many times. It was always more me going like, hey, like, I remember when I took French.
Yeah.
Like, I had just finished up, like I took it junior year, the full junior year, and then senior year I did it the first semester, but I wasn't feeling it.
Yeah. Yeah.
So I said, hey, I'd like to drop out of this. Can I do something else instead?
Right. We're not going to get turn this into the education.
Yeah.
Voices know, from the education cast.
Yes.
But suffice to say, I actually learned a few things about the American education system here, and I wanted to double check them with an actual American person who had been to school in America to make sure that it was correct.
Yes.
So Adam is forced into music class after having played, taken a few lessons when he was younger. And who else should join Adam in this class but our erstwhile hero of the story, shall we say, Eugene Skulovich.
Good old Skull.
Who walks in and basically takes the drums away from a guy. He's like, no, the teacher said I wasn't allowed to play, so I need to play drums. And then
I just like how Skull does that. He's like, yeah, I get the drums, just move along.
And then we meet our music teacher, who's a complete mess, and it is announced that they are in day one of this class, right? Quite clearly in day one of this class, or maybe day two, because Adam and Skull joined a bit late because they got told they couldn't do their other class, right? And already they're being told that there's going to be an expert recital that night.
No pressure. None at all.
And then Adam plays chopsticks on the piano, right? And Skull turns around and goes, hey, man, you're not bad. We now know from later on that Skull is a classically trained concert pianist who has been training for like 13 years. And he tells Adam he's doing well. And it's a... when you first watch the episode, you don't know the pianist is Skull. It's just like, wow, Skull's impressed by him playing piano, right? But when you know that the pianist is Skull, it carries something even more, right? Because it's like Skull saying, hey, man, you're doing a good job to someone who's clearly not as good at something as he is, right?
Yeah.
And it's so indicative of how far Bulk and Skull have come. This whole episode is so indicative of how far Bulk and Skull have come in 4 years.
And this is also one of their weaker seasons, too.
Yeah, they completely regress for most of the rest of the season back to, like, pre-season three. But this episode is so good.
But yeah.
So later that day, Kat, Tommy, and Adam, as I said, are walking down the hall, and they hear the piano player playing. They rush to the music room, and he is once again gone. And Kat and Tommy go off to do something, and Adam starts to practice the piano.
Well, there were cogs that were sent back there too.
Right. Yeah, they have a bit of a fight, don't they?
Yes.
Where Adam rides one like a surfboard and dances with one of them. Oh, that's the other thing. In that fight, Adam's facing against like six or seven cogs. And he's like, I could beat you with one hand tied behind my back. And he proceeds to do so. And then in Oily to Bed, Oily to Rise later on in the season, him and Tanya lose a fight to three cogs. Anyway, consistency, who needs it?
I don't know what you're talking about, good sir.
So we get to the point where Adam is sitting down to play piano to practice. And he finds a dull note on the keyboard, a dead note. He opens the top of the piano. First of all, I would like to point out this is a stand-up piano, like you'd see in most like bars or whatever. And it's producing the sound of a grand piano. Error number one. Musical science doesn't work that way. Anyway, but he reaches into the piano and pulls out this piece of paper that says piano rehearsal 4:30 concert hall, right? Which has clearly been left there by Skull. How Skull's reminder to himself for his lesson that he's been taking every week for 13 years, A, needs to be written down, or B, is in the piano, I will never know. But it is a convenient clue that is left behind. So Adam's like, right, I'm going to go check this out. And he starts running to the concert hall. And outside the concert hall, as he leaves, Prince Mondo is like, is that King Mondo is like,
we downgraded Mondo.
Yeah,
to a
sure. Lord Prince Regent Mondo, who notoriously builds monsters. He builds machines. Just turns the piano into a monster. Pulls a Lord Zedd, turns the piano into a monster. But even though Lord Zedd shouldn't have been able to turn into a monster, because he set up early in his thing where he couldn't turn inanimate objects into monsters, but he did it anyway. So rules are just out of the window. Dogs and cats are living together, mass hysteria. And the Adam gets to the concert hall, and he sees the pianist, who I should have mentioned earlier has like a big cloak over his head, so you can't see his face, so he doesn't know it's Skull, being attacked by this new monster, Fortunissimo or something, and a bunch of cogs, and he just sprints straight at them, jumps in the air, and morphs. While this mystery pianist is looking right at him.
We tend to have quite a bit of that this season.
Looking right at him. And then the other Rangers eventually show up. We get
Zeo jet cycles.
Yeah, for some reason the Zeo jet cycles are there. Because
merchandising.
No, probably because they were in the Sentai footage. Let's be honest. and then we finally see Tanya and Rocky in this episode, but they are only in a morphed form at this point. And then they beat the monster, and we cut to the recital to after the monster fight, where Adam shows up at the piano room and is able to unmask the pianist and discovers that it is Skull. And there is this brilliant moment between Adam and Skull where Skull's like, Adam's like, why are you tell anyone that you have this talent? And he's like, I don't want people to make fun of me. And Bulk would never understand. And Adam's like, if he's truly your friend, he'll appreciate your talent, right? So Adam talks Skull into performing at the recital that night. To the point where even when he's announced, the teacher's like, and we have a sudden join Eugene Skullovich? And the curtains part, and he comes out, and there's a grand piano on the stage, and he's in a full long coat, and he's carrying a candelabra, and he sets it down, and he sits down, and everyone's kind of snickering a little bit because they think it's a bit of a, he's doing a bit, right? And he sticks his gum under the piano, which is so Skull. I love that bit. And he proceeds to play this music brilliantly.
Well, at first, he didn't do the like the kind of joking around type thing, which led into
he put on a bit of a show,
which I thought was very appropriate to do it that way with him. Because if you didn't do it that way with him, have him come out with the mannerisms, the gum, and then jokingly play the piano, and then have it feed into him doing the actual like concert stuff, it probably wouldn't have come off as so natural.
And then about halfway through, Bulk walks in and is like, who's the idiot playing the classical music? Turns around and see that it's Skull. And he is absolutely gobsmacked. And at the end, Skull gets a standing ovation. He does the whole Elvis Presley, thank you very much. And Bulk rushes the stage and just like, dude, that's the most beautiful thing I've ever heard. But I thought you said you didn't like music. I was wrong, that kind of thing. And it's such a nice underlining of Bulk and Skull and how far they've come, as I said before.
And it also seems like, while this is a great growth episode, you know, in a way for Bulk because of how he's growing in the acceptance of his friend and his talents that he has. Yeah. This is another instance where they've really worked on Skull.
Yeah.
Because, like, Skull, between the two, gets more of the grounded storytelling, character development style stuff. Whereas Bulk, he kind of gets it, but he doesn't get to the level of where Skull always gets it.
Which I really liked, because giving that little bit of extra emphasis to Skull makes the tease we see later in Small Problem, is it? With him possibly being the Gold Ranger, even more plausible. Because there's this great moment at the end of the episode where Adam gives him a thumbs up, like, good job, and he gives Adam a thumbs up back, and then Bulk thinks he's giving Bulk the thumbs up, so they both start doing the thumbs up. It's great.
Yeah, it's like, and not only that, but like, in a way, it kind of you know, because we also talked about how great it would have been if Skull got to become the White Ranger because of the
dynamic
of the Dawn,
yeah,
stuff like that. So it's like, there's just so much leveling, and not only that, but I think one of the things that really made Skull stand out, even from season one, was his friendship with Kim.
Because
the friendship with Kim was the one thing that kind of kept developing him a little bit as the seasons went on. And then obviously now that Kim's gone, Adam kind of stepped into that spot with this episode to help develop Skull even more. So.
Yeah, it's strange because We joked a little bit during most of the Mighty Morphin era about who are the real bullies, right? The Rangers were the bullies. But there was always this, in the late, especially late season two, during season three, there was always a good relationship with Bulk and Skull, especially after like the incident with the baby in the park, right?
Yeah,
part of me wonders if Bulk and Skull just had an issue with Jason, Trini, and Zach, but because they disappeared not long after that. But from that point in season two to the end of season three, there was this growing respect between the two camps up until the point at the end of season three where they're graduating from Junior Police Academy. And like the Rangers, like, we're proud of Bulk and Skull. But then this season, it kind of eroded back to an adversarial thing. But then there's this episode where Adam's like, I'm going to be supportive of Skull. And anyway, we've talked enough about Instrument of Destruction. It's a really good episode. Go watch it. Now we move on to Mean Screen and the introduction of... I'm not going to say my favorite. Probably my favorite side character. Because I don't consider Bulk and Skull side characters, right? We get to meet Raymond for the first time, who we will see here, we'll see in Small Problem, and we'll see in the awful flash forward episode, Season to Remember. And then he's gone forever. Never to be mentioned again. He is erased from the timeline, and he is part of Thanos' snap. But he doesn't come back. But this is an episode that was basically based off of people in the 90s didn't know what the internet was. If you watch this episode now, everything in it is so completely grown-worthy, right? The premise is Mondo builds a robot that gives stuff computer viruses. That's it. That's the whole premise of the episode. It starts out with Tanya and Adam in the computer lab at the school being taught how to get online by everybody's favorite side character, Raymond. And I'm making that official. He is everybody's favorite side character in Zio, especially those that count, which for all I care is just me. And he's like, now you're online. And then there's a couple of moments later, he's like, this is a website. And you're supposed to be like, ooh. And it is peak 90s version of the internet, right? It's like moving graphics and like it's like the stuff you would see on Tripod or GeoCities or whatever it was back then.
God, GeoCities, that's so long ago.
And on Tanya's screen, this little happy face starts bouncing around. And she's like, oh, look at it. It's so cute. And Raymond's like, you need to be careful, Tanya. Things like that could lead to it. And she clicks on it. And he's like, you will get a virus in 45 seconds. Because it's so thoughtful of people who make viruses to give you 45 seconds to not get the virus. We proceed to have the 45 seconds that Tanya has to not get a virus last about 4 minutes of on-screen time, with Raymond trying various things and then running to his computer and writing an antivirus software in 45 seconds. That's not how computer science works. Okay.
So for the record, we've had that's not how musical science works, and nope. Now that's not how computer science works.
Yep.
So yeah.
And there's like this threat of it taking down the whole computer lab and all this sort of stuff. And Raymond writes this antivirus and installs it on Tanya's computer, and everything is right with the world. I really like Raymond, in case I haven't made that absolutely clear. I really wish he'd stuck around. And I really wish they'd made him the Gold Ranger.
Like, I like Raymond. I would like to point out that the Ranger Wiki labels Raymond as Tanya and Adam's Jewish friend. And that's about it.
Well, we don't get a chance to learn a lot more about him.
Yeah.
Right.
But
he's friends with Kat and Tommy as well, because we see that in A Small Problem.
Yeah.
And like the whole point of his appearance in Season to Remember is that he's Jewish. He's going to tell you about Hanukkah.
Yeah. But like, I like Raymond. Like one of the big things I really like about Raymond is how he is introduced and utilized in this episode. Mm-hmm. It's a shame we only get two more episodes with him after the fact, because taking care of the virus here with the computer because of Tanya being like, ooh, smiley face, was a good way of showing him as like, because keep in mind, Billy's gone.
Yeah.
This is a good way to kind of set him up as like the new Billy in a way. So it's like, this could have been a really interesting setup.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose.
But
I just wish he'd stuck around. I think one of the main problems with the side characters I almost want to say in most of... It's only really an issue in the Zordon era, right? Because that's when it's an interconnected story. It's fine having like one-off side characters in one-off seasons, right? I don't mind that. But the problem with the Zordon era side characters is it's just not... Most of them are either really one-dimensional, or they've got so what I'm looking for, performative issues, shall we say. Their actors aren't great. Looking at you, child, from Season to Remember. Anyway, both children in Season to Remember. Anyway, it's just not... Raymond's a well-performed character that has a potential to be a very good side character. If they put more effort into like exploring him a bit, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I think they could have done that. They just stopped. And it's really annoying. Do not like it. Hashtag justice for Raymond.
And so, just so you know, to throw this out there.
Yeah.
So outside the three episodes of Power Rangers Zeo that he does.
Yeah.
The actor, Darren Press.
Yeah.
Only does one other show.
Huh.
Beetleborgs.
Okay.
And he plays a drummer. And it was all of his acting credits are from 1996, which was also when Zeo was out.
Okay. So. But yeah, so Mondo sees this virus, that's the word I'm looking for, and people's reaction to it. And it's like, you know what we'll do? I'm going to create a monster that can spread a virus, because everything in Angel Grove is run off a single central computer.
Because of course Angel Grove is.
Bear in mind that we find out at the end of next season there's a space station in Angel Grove.
And nobody knew it was there.
Yep.
Plot convenience.
Yep. Yep. Anyway, there's a... They make this monster, and they send him down to Earth, and he starts infecting everything with this virus. And one of the things he manages to do, because for some reason, the Power Rangers Command Center doesn't have any form of firewall or protective anything. And he just...
He gets the blueprints to the Zeozords.
Gets the blueprints to the Zeozords and somehow makes it so they can't combine. Which, according to everyone in the episode, makes them unable to be used. If only there was a way the Zords could fight individually. Oh, wait. There is.
You just don't want to do it. Or the Sentai footage just doesn't exist because they never really did it that much either.
Yeah. But, and then there's just, the Rangers then try to fight Mean Screen in this computer room. And they're whipping out these laser guns and all of this other stuff, right? And they're like, oh no, our weapons are useless because they have a virus, even though they're not being given a virus. They're quite clearly just being scanned and he's adapting to the way they work, right? Like the Borg doing Star Trek.
Yeah.
But there's this, moment where they're like, we can't fight this guy because our laser guns don't work. At which point I'm like, you know when you fight every other monster on the planet, you run up and punch it?
Why don't you try that?
Why don't you just punch it?
Maybe throw in a couple kicks here or there.
Just punch it. And then there's this long drawn out sequence where they're just given the runaround by Mean Screen and they're trying to fight and they can't hurt him and they're getting their butts whooped. And then Mean Screen is made to grow by Clank and Orbis, right? At which point the Rangers are like, well, we can't fight him with our Zeozords because they're useless. At which point Adam's like, I got an idea.
Well, actually, before that, they do get a minor victory where they use the danger wheel.
Oh, right. Yeah. I try not to think about the warrior wheel or whatever it's called.
Yeah.
Because it's stupid.
I mean, it's stupid, but they do get like that small little victory at that
defender moment. Wheel. That's what it's called.
Yeah. But then as Clank makes the monster girl, the Z Megazord's out of commission. Adam, you know, has an idea. He goes to Raymond.
He's like, yo, Raymond, what up? It's your boy, the Green Ranger. Yes, I sound a lot like your friend Adam. No, he doesn't actually say that. He talks directly to Raymond. A lot they talk to Raymond. And Raymond doesn't once recognize the voice of his friend Adam.
You know, we've talked about this before. I think it's, you know, for sake of television, we know, we hear the actual actors, but because, you know, to the individual that
they're talking to. Until that is specifically said in canon, I'm not taking it. I won't.
I mean, that's fair, but like it's a theory that we can still run with, essentially.
You can feel like- free to run with that theory. I'm not doing it. So Raymond talks directly to the Green Ranger for like 5 minutes, maybe. And then it's just, it's just doesn't once mention, doesn't once mention Adam or you sound like my boy or whatever. And then out of the blue, he's just like, can I have your virus? And he's like, yep. He gives the virus to the dude, to the Green Ranger. He teleports out. And Raymond instantly says, they're not going to believe this on the internet. He starts posting on the internet. I thought everything had a computer virus.
Raymond might have did antivirus for at least his computer so he could still be active.
Sure. Okay. Not like the internet providers or, you know what? You know what? I'm not gonna. I'm just going to say, other than the fact this episode has Raymond in it, it's utterly avoidable. If you want any clue as to how they know Raymond in Small Problem and in Seasons Remember, watch this episode. If you don't care about that, just skip it. It's bad. But it's got Raymond, so yay.
I still like how they utilize him in this episode, though.
Yeah, like I said, it's got Raymond in it. Yay. But it's the only thing about the episode that's any good. So. Right? It's just a waste of an episode. Make the season shorter. Like,
But at the end of the episode, they have Billy appear on the viewing globe as he's coming home.
Yeah, I was going to get to that, but yeah, go ahead.
Which leads into our next episode of Billy's Wild Ride.
Yeah, they say something like, oh, Billy's going to have to know that he's got some competition in town. At which point we hear, did I hear someone say my name? And there's Billy on the view screen. Which is weird because at the beginning of the next episode, they can't contact him. But anyway, we move on to Mr. Billy's Wild Ride.
The PG version.
Yeah. Why is Billy flying? Oh, so the plot is Billy is flying back from Aquitar. Because he's been on Aquitar for 4 or 5 episodes at this point. And he's flying back from Aquitar. And he's just gonna just come home. He's all like, I want a smoothie. But the question, I've got a question for you, Mike. When at the beginning of season 3, the Rangers needed to go to Illinois to help Dax, how did they get there and back?
Teleportation.
Uh-huh. And when they had to brought the Aquitar Rangers to Earth, how did they get there?
Teleportation.
And when they had to go to that one planet to get the Sword of Light to transfer the powers to Adam, Rocky, and Aisha, how did they get there?
Teleportation.
So why is Billy flying a ship?
Probably for the same reason why Sestro used the ship 5 episodes earlier to come to Earth.
Which is?
I have no damn idea.
Exactly.
Plot convenience.
By the power of plot.
The power of plot compels you.
And then we just kind of get some communication with Billy and the command center. And Mondo comes up with the plan of knocking Billy off course. So he shoots Billy, and Billy's thrusters and things go offline, and he starts spiraling towards the machine sky base. Oh no. Bum, bum, bum. So there is then this scramble for the command center to use a tractor beam to lock onto Billy's pod and pull him back to Earth. And everyone scrambles to a station except Tommy, who stands in the middle of the room and barks orders like a good leader does. Looking at you, Zordon.
I mean, he learns from the best. I mean, let's be honest.
In all fairness, Zordon doesn't have much else he can sort of give. He doesn't have arms or legs, does he?
But we can still say Tommy learns from the best.
Yeah, sure. So they fire off this tractor beam, and there's another beam thing from the sky base which interferes with it. And Billy is then knocked off course a second time. But this time, instead of flying towards the sky base, he's flying towards the sun.
Billy really wanted to work on his tan.
At which everyone's like, oh no, Billy is going to the sun. And everyone's like, oh no, it's Billy, it's the sun, it's going to burn, and it's going to be cool. I mean, oh no. And apparently they can't just try the tractor beam again because they fried their energy circuit.
The fuel cell.
The fuel cell. And the fuel cell backups are stored in a university warehouse.
Power of plot compels you.
Power of Sentai footage. Because they needed to be in a warehouse.
I mean, everyone loves...
Just bear with me here a minute, Mike. And you are a fan of trying to fix holes in plots that are never explained. So explain to me, with this mystical booking of yours, why the super secret Power Rangers store their tech in a university warehouse.
That was a wonderful question. I got no idea, but if I were to try to come up with something, I would have to say, being how Billy is no longer a Power Ranger, before he left for Aquatar, he was probably doing some stuff after school at the university, and he was like, hey, Zordon, I got this really cool idea. Because I'm working on the Zords in secret, why don't we store this stuff in secret here at this random place that makes absolutely no sense?
So
I'm completely full of it on this one.
I have follow-up questions, but we'll move on. So I have a second follow-up question. Why are they using a tractor beam?
I didn't even know they had a tractor beam.
Uh-huh. But I would ask you to cast your mind back to episode 4 of this season. I think it's episode 4 of this season. Target Rangers.
Yeah, that would be episode 4.
Where the Rangers themselves in the Zeo Megazord were being thrown into the sun.
Because Brock Lesnar showed up and just...
Brock Lesnar, yeah. And they used the various combinations of the Zeo Zord helmet, battle helmets, to get away from the sun. Why not just do the same thing?
Because that would be too easy. Fair enough.
So we get our first big, oh no, is Tommy all right incident of the season. We'll get another one of these in Oily to Bed, Oily to Rise, where he nearly drowns. He's got
quite a few of those this season.
Yeah, he's got like two or three of them this season.
Well, he has one in Where in the World is Ranger Z05. Technically the King of a Day two-parter.
Yeah.
The No Business Like Snow Business multi-part episodes.
But we
pretty get much his four-episode arc starting with Inner Spirit to Spare an Arrowhead.
Yeah, we get a lot of, oh no, Tommy might be dead. No, nope, he's alive. And I'm really sad when he shows up again. But we got our first instance of that when the warehouse that is storing the fuel cells explodes. And everyone else gets out. And everyone's like, oh no, Tommy's got to be okay. And I'm like, does he? Does he though? And he turns out he's fine. Because the death will not stop him from ruining this franchise. And then they go back. They try to do the tractor beam thing again, but it turns out the tractor beam itself is stuck. So Tommy's like, "I'm gonna go up and fix it." At which point, King Mondo sends Quadra Fighters to stop him. At which point, I'm wondering why he doesn't just morph and get in his Zord that flies and fight the Quadra Fighters. Let someone else fix the tractor beam. But no, Tommy's got to hog all the glory for himself. They eventually get Billy back to Earth. And I'm just wondering how on Earth the Machine Empire managed to conquer an entire galaxy. Because they're really bad at them, their tactics.
Yeah.
And why doesn't Mondo try to stop the second tractor beam attempt like he did stop the first?
Because...
Though I think they mentioned something about them having fried their own fuel source or whatever.
Yeah, I think they had both fried their fuel sources. And I think the reason they sent a monster in the cogs to attack the Rangers at the warehouse was because they wanted the fuel cells for themselves.
All right. And there's a bit at the end where he's like, oh, from now on, we're going to have to check every time we like check our stores before we do anything.
Yeah.
And that's when I was like, how did they conquer a galaxy again?
I mean... power of plot convenience.
Another missable episode, honestly. Save for the fact that it gets Billy back on the planet. Nothing of use is missed, really.
Yeah. It's okay, Ben. We got through it.
The second time.
Yeah.
Anyway... yeah, that's been the reviews for this time. One really, really, really good episode. And then the other two, which are... it's weird, right? Because we were coming out of episode season three. Being like, oh, well... hopefully we'll get a bit more, you know what I mean? Like a bit more good content. But filler's still filler, you know?
Yep. Like, I mean, essentially what we got was one really great episode, the introduction of a great side character, and the return of Billy.
Yeah. Yeah. That being said, thank you for listening in, everybody. We are going to tell you where you can find us on the internet. Starting with Mike, where can people find you?
Twitter at
and only you.
Twitter at @thelindenbaum75, Facebook at facebook.com/x75productions, Twitch at twitch.tv/themichaelx75, and of course everything's on the website at txhdhockey.com. And I stop there.
Okay. You're not going to do the /x75 or whatever?
Oh yeah, and /x75productions, or you can click on the x75productions tab in the menu on the top of the site on the website.
As for me, you can find me at Bob T. Goldfish on Twitter. You can find me. Yes, I'm doing it myself, Mike. This is your penance for having screwed up this episode. You can find me doing the video game thing at twitch.tv/321_TV. And you can find both Mike and myself over at thxthockey.com doing awesome mania at that X75. Productions drop down, which is in the wrestling podcast that we do with our friend Matt Carroll and occasionally a special guest. This podcast you can find at VFTG_PR on Twitter, and you can find it on Spotify and Google Podcasts. That being said, it has been an up and down episode. And then up and down, and then down again, because it's the second time we've recorded it. And I'm going to keep bringing it up, because it makes Mike feel bad. I'm so glad this is an audio-only podcast, because you can't see what he just did. That being said, we'll leave you, as we always do, whenever I am a part of an episode, except for that one episode where Sasha forgot to let me do it. Which is by saying, guys, gals, and non-binary pals. In the words of the 16th President of the United States, Abraham Lincoln, be excellent to each other. Party on, non-gender-specific honorifics.
And until next time, grab your Zionizers, and may the power protect you.
Peace!